All right, Clay, a little bit of trivia for you. Before this episode, what was the last appearance of Michael Dorn as Worf in Star Trek?
I don't know, like a commercial in Japan or something?
It was actually Nemesis. Which is kind of surprising to me. I asked you that just because I read it and I was like, you know, that makes sense, but I would never guess Nemesis that it's been 20-something years since he's played Worf.
Well, I mean, I guess it makes sense because, I mean...
He voiced a character in Star Trek Online. I don't know if you would count that, but I don't really count that. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the TNG was obviously over. Deep Space Nine was over by that point, right?
Yeah. I also would have guessed that he was Worf in like a Japanese burger commercial or something, but it didn't happen. Interesting.
I'm surprised they didn't figure out a way to jam him into Voyager somehow.
Yeah. I mean, they would have had a couple years where they could have done some sort of long distance communication thing. They were doing that with other characters, though.
Voyager was done by the time Nemesis came out, right?
It was, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So I guess Nemesis would have still preempted that or been after that.
Nemesis was like the end of the franchise, wasn't it? Wasn't that like the last thing until
Enterprise
2009?
Enterprise came after.
Oh, it did?
Yeah. I think Nemesis was 02.
For any of these things. Okay. Was it that early? Wow.
Hold on.
The TNG era of Star Trek.
Yeah, it's 02 is Star Trek Nemesis.
I have no concept of like the timeline of it because I'm always surprised when I remember it started in 1987.
Yes, that's always the big surprise. Yeah.
And I'm always surprised.
I'm surprised by how early it ended in the 90s, that it ended in like 93, basically.
Right. Yeah. That's like one of those things where it's like Cheers was done in like 1993 or like a year before Star Trek was over or something. And it's like, what, Cheers was on like that?
Seinfeld was just peaking at the time the TNG was ending. Yeah.
But yeah, like Nemesis, if you asked me to guess when Nemesis came out, I don't know if I could pinpoint that. I know you just said 2002, but I don't know if that's one that I could accurately tell you.
Yeah.
Because it's so in the ether with the rest of the series.
It is. That's when it all starts to become a hazy mystery, as Larry David would say. This is Disengage. Welcome, patrons, to your podcast recording of Star Trek Picard. This is Disengage. It's the second episode of the third season. Second episode of the third season of Picard. Came out on February 23rd, 2023. What number symmetry we have going there. Written by Christopher Monfett and Sean Tretta. Directed by Douglas Arniakoski. In universe date 2401, in this episode, aided by Seven of Nine and the crew of the USS Titan, Picard makes a shocking discovery that will alter his life forever and puts him on a collision course with the most cunning enemy he's ever encountered. Who writes these blurbs for these new shows? Meanwhile, Raffi races to track a catastrophic weapon and collides with a familiar ally. Does Paramount just send them the copy about what to write for these things? That's a hell of a blurb that they've got there. So this is it. Disengage with the second episode of the season. So I was wondering, Clay, if we were going to moderate our views. I was wondering if your hot take or your hot perspective on episode one and my cold take were going to give us like a lukewarm soup that we've got in the middle, like we've come together. I felt a little bit more positive towards the show. Everything's relative that I'm about to say. I felt a little bit more positive towards the show. So I'm wondering if you felt a little bit taken down from the show. And are we going to meet in the middle somewhere?
I think we are, yes.
Okay.
Well, okay. So here's the thing. I'm of two minds about this episode, okay? Because taken on its own, I find this to be an incredibly unremarkable hour of television.
Go on.
It's very much like there's not a ton going on. The stuff with Raffi might be some of the worst dialogue I've ever heard.
Yeah, it's
in
real
a modern
bad.
Television show. Yeah. Like I went the
you have to choose right now, your son or your career.
Not even
right
that,
now.
Man. Like the first scene when she's on the ship, the
giving
La Serena,
exposition to the computer.
Oh my God. That exposition was so fucking awful.
It's terrible.
Where she's like, something, something, this Romulan guy who knew this guy named Sneed, and he's the one that I now have to find. It's like, okay.
And well, I can't believe that I'm out here doing that, trying to find this guy when there's 100 people dead because of me and this guy. It's like,
that's,
wow.
That's another thing. This transporter technology opened a hole beneath a gigantic building,
yeah.
Sucked it in, and then dropped it like 200 yards to the left.
Yes, with the sound effect of the Titanic sinking, I think, yes. Going on in the background.
Destroying not only the building, but whatever it dropped on. And only 117 people died.
All things considered, a remarkable survival story.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. I mean, maybe we can give them the benefit of the doubt that it was so far. I don't know.
I mean,
but when she said, I had to go back because she said, if we had acted, then 117 people, 117 could still be alive. And I was like, 1,000? I had to go back to see if the news report said it. It just said 117. I was like, that's a catastrophic thing. Was it their day off?
Well, that's the thing. It's a recruitment center, right?
Yeah.
So is the implication
just the janitorial staff?
That no one cares about Starfleet recruitment? Is that like, you know, this is one of these wormhole or rabbit holes, if you want to get wormhole thematically.
Yeah, it's not a big deal.
It's like, but it's, you know, in a better show, that number means something. You go, right. Why did they pick 117? That's a strange number to pick. And, you know, there would be a better show about like recruitment is down in the Federation and therefore the building is kind of empty or something. But
yeah.
They didn't really
like it's a
anything.
Relic, a relic of a past time. It's right. Like a museum now or something like that. You know?
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, so it's like standing on its own, I thought it was fairly unremarkable. However, it very much feels like the middle of a story. Like it feels like a bridge episode. And I had read that apparently this season is broken into arcs.
Mm-hmm.
The first four episodes are an arc, and then after that it goes into a different arc. And this very much feels like, oh, it's just a movie that they just chopped up into hour-long snippets.
Mm-hmm.
And this is unfortunately one that I didn't feel like worked as well on its own. That being said, I actually kind of I liked some of the stuff that they were doing with Jack Crusher and the debate over whether or not to hand him over felt like some classic Star Trek, you know, bullshit.
Yeah.
So that was kind of fun. I still like Shaw, even though he goes a little bit too over the top in this one, I think. But yeah, I'm a little bit dialed back. I'm still willing to see it out, but
yeah.
this one left me a little colder than the first one did.
Yeah. So I guess I'm the opposite, which is that, and again, everything is kind of relative here. I think that compared to the first two seasons, the first two episodes of this season feel like a more restrained version of the chaos that was the previous seasons, really.
Yeah.
So it's like they've simplified things a little bit. And that's helpful just because watching this show, this season, does not feel like I'm not throwing my hands up every scene going like, what the fuck is going on?
Right.
Like,
sure.
I kind of understand. And a lot of it is what you're saying, which is that in this episode, they don't really do anything. So you don't have a chance to go like, what the fuck is going on? Because nothing's really happening. Which is both like damned with faint praise and just kind of a difference between the prior two seasons. Like, I think in season two, we'd have already gone through like four plot threads by the time that episode two had ended. So this feels remarkably restrained and semi-professional in that it's understandable and somewhat easy to track what's going on within it. I think that it has all the hallmarks of the first two seasons in terms of like decision making that they make, and just the like modern Trek in general is clearly in this show. And it's not a salvation season at all, at least so far. It's like it is a lot more of the same that we've seen, but it's a better version of that.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's good. It's not a good show so far, but it's not an abomination that it was previously. And so I find myself watching it And in some ways, it's actually less enjoyable to watch than season two because I can't even laugh at it anymore. But it is comprehensible. So I'm interested to see where it goes, but I don't really, like, for your thing about the season, the arcs within the season, I could see plots going that way, but I feel hesitant to say that I would think that the villain or the main story would disappear after a couple episodes. So I'd be interested to see how that pans out. But like, I don't think that we're going to see Amanda Plummer's Vadek character or whatever, Vadek or whatever her name is, disappear anytime soon. It doesn't seem that, like, that would be sensible to me. But we'll see. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know. Like, that's the when I read that about the arc thing, I was surprised because this show doesn't feel. I think it's conditioning from the way that new Star Trek works.
Yeah, well, I could see them fighting this ship for the next episode and then doing something else after that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, but just like going into it, this modern style of Star Trek, whether it's Picard or Discovery, has sort of conditioned us to not expect things to just sort of be done with and then move on. So, you know, I don't know, maybe they do the thing that 24 used to do where it's like they get to the end and when they defeat the guy in episode 4, they uncover
something
the next big
up.
Thing.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but I guess that and it's quibbling about differences there. Like because you had said like the show has conditioned us to not know when something is over. I might be misquoting you there, but
no, I'm saying it's conditioned us to not expect them to do that. Because these Discovery seasons and the first two Picard seasons are very much the first episode. We're going to set up the thing that we're going to. The dead horse we're going to beat for 10 episodes.
Oh, I see.
Like there's nothing from previous seasons to make us think that whatever is going on with Vedic is going to be wrapped up in two more episodes and then they're going to move on to something else.
I could see that. I guess what I'm thinking is that I would agree that yes, like the general thrust of the plot of the season has always stuck around, but the show's writing has caused you to be like, oh, I didn't realize that we were done with that because it doesn't sort of hold on to ideas. Like I always feel surprised in modern Trek shows that like, oh, I guess that story was just over in episode two and we're never going to see that again.
Yes. Yeah.
So I don't know. I
all she had to do was fly the ship again, Wes. And she's fine now.
she got over it. So there are some, I thought that my big positive from this one was that I was prejudicial towards Amanda Plummer in the trailer, and I think that the trailer was an awful trailer for her character. And I don't think she's a good character so far. She's pretty much the cliche overpowered villain who knows everything about you and sort of cocky against the heroes, which is not unheard of, and that's been done before. But her performance at least has a little bit of energy that the trailer did not capture whatsoever, I think. So I was happy about that. I don't know how you felt about her.
Yeah, I thought she was effectively slimy, but yes, it does.
a little bit of Nero energy from O'Neill.
Yeah, I was going to say Star Trek, for some reason, I don't know if it's just box office algorithms, but Star Trek, the people who run Star Trek seem to think that the best Star Trek always has a central villain. And that's generally not the case if you really look back at what the best Star Trek actually is.
Like a solitary person, an individual villain.
Yeah. And for some reason, Christopher Lloyd, notwithstanding, it's always the same kind of, it's always sort of like Khan Light.
Yep.
And I'm not really sure why they keep going back to that well, especially because the reason Khan works is because he has a connection to everybody. It's not just somebody random shows person. Up and knows everything. So her thing where she's like, I know everything about you. I know everybody on the ship is like, I'm sure it's supposed to build intrigue, but it doesn't come off as anything novel to me.
Well, here's the thing that I thought failed and her ship failed in general was that there's no demonstration of her power from those reveals, which I thought was kind of crazy. So like she knows a lot about every single character. She knows that Picard's a synth. She knows that Shaw has like a had like a psychotic break or something in his background. And she doesn't use any of that information about them. It's just this kind of flaunting that she knows it. Similarly, the only power her ship is shown to have is when they sort of analyze its weapon systems. You don't see it destroy anything. You don't see it like obliterate a ship, you know?
So has there been a worse sequence of dialogue in a Star Trek show?
Careful here, Kwai. We're in.
I know. Has there been worse dialogue than Picard saying, "What did she just do?" And then
Ensign LaForge
saying, "She threw a ship at us." It's like, what did you? did we really need to call that out? I'm pretty sure everybody saw what just happened.
Yeah.
It's
a bad sequence.
I thought in and of itself, the throwing of the ship was kind of neat. Once they bring attention to it, I was like, okay, guys.
They saw it on the view screen, what she did. There was no reason to ask about
it. It's not like they couldn't see it and they just felt themselves get hit or something. I thought it undermined the scanning of her ship because they go through and they list off this giant armament that she has. And then instead of using something like a weapon on a scale that we've never seen before or whatever, she just throws a ship at them.
Yeah. That's what I mean. I thought she was like, she should have just obliterated whatever that little medical ship was and, you know, use that. Cause they even mentioned that she has some weapon that they've never seen before. Is the tractor beam the weapon or is that just the tractor beam?
I think so. There was a little bit of techno babble gobbledygook in there. I think that might have been because everybody seemed to be amazed that she could do that.
Yeah, and I thought that seemed like something a tractor beam could do, really.
Yeah, I mean, I guess technically we've never seen anybody do it, but I don't know. I guess it doesn't feel that remarkable.
I'm unclear. So that was my problem with her. As much as I like the performance, even if it's a little derivative, I at least was relieved that it was not the dead, like, wet blanket performance that the trailer seemed to imply that it was. Yeah. She has a little bit going for her. She's could be interesting.
Amanda Plummer, at the very least, is never a boring actress. Like, she never gives a boring performance.
Yeah. Even though much like you see younger Picard when you watch Picard, all I see is the diner scene from Pulp Fiction when I see every performance that she does because it's kind of the same energy in there. She's going to execute every motherfucking last one of these people.
One of my favorite performances of her, have you seen So I Married an Axe Murderer?
Yeah.
The Mike Myers movie. She plays Nancy Allen, the girlfriend's sister who turns out to be the axe murderer. She's so good in that because her whole... her whole character up until the reveal is just to be weird and unnerving to Mike Myers.
Right.
I won't go into my favorite scenes from that movie, but
I haven't seen that movie in a long time. She's
this scene where he wakes up at the girlfriend's house and she's not there. It's the first night they spent together and he meets the sister who's weird.
Yeah.
And then she's like, "Do you want to stay for breakfast? How does silver dollar pancakes, bacon, eggs, freshly squeezed orange juice sound?" And he goes, "That sounds amazing." And then they cut to her pouring a bowl of cereal, and she goes, "I'm sorry, we didn't have
I remember that joke.
Underrated movie.
Plummer in this one. So I'm positive there about her. I think the negatives all come down to the thing about... she didn't really show any power, and it's all just like exposition about what this is supposed to mean. And also, it's maybe less noticeable than it is in other shows, but I still feel that like the show drives itself by someone writes a scene and they hand it to the next person who then writes the next scene. So When Picard and Riker and Crusher are on their medical ship and that Vidic's ship shows up, there's like 10 minutes of them talking about it. And then they cut to a couple scenes and then Picard starts putting up these transport inhibitors like a 90-year-old man will. And then
that whole scene was fucking awful.
Then she tries to beam him. So why? Why did it take that long If that's all she wanted to do, it's just there are weird things about that. Like, that's the thing I noticed most about the plotting, is that it continues to feel like that modern Trek sensibility of there is no long-term plan here. It just feels like you end a scene and then someone picks it up from there, and there's this sort of like really awkward jump where they're like, "Oh, we should have revealed that we were trying to get Crusher, so let's try to beam him off." But it's like, "Well, you've been sitting there for like 25 minutes. Why didn't they try to beam him off before?"
Yeah, and there's other stuff too, like when after they fail to beam Jack out of the ship, they send in a couple more assassins, and Riker like walks into the doorway and like underhands a grenade down the hall that blows up and kills them or whatever, and then Picard is like, "Good, now they'll know that the death is on their hands when they come to this ship." And it's like he's reacting as though Riker went out there with two machine guns and killed like 45 people. Like, they already came to this ship and were killed by Beverly Crusher.
Right.
Like, this is not like some sort of grandstand from Riker here.
Well, that's the thing about, and, you know, maybe we're a little bit all over the place. Feel free to interrupt with whatever your takes are, but it's like, the other weird thing is that beyond the plot, I feel that the writing for the characters in the show and in this episode and this season and what it continues to be is that characters say things that I don't recognize as true, but apparently the characters are being truthful about what they're talking about. So
okay.
I think Shaw is a great example of that. And I think that Picard is kind of when Picard is talking about things about I think he has a couple lines in this one about like what Beverly would have done. And what he says is not the reality.
She would have pushed them to the ground and put a gun to the back of their head and said, "Welcome to hell, motherfucker," before blowing their brains all over the bottom of her ship.
The way he describes her doesn't line up with things that we've seen, but I don't know. He does it so frequently that I almost feel like the show is saying that he's an unreliable narrator at this point.
Do you have an example?
There's something that he says about Beverly in this episode that is not the case that we saw earlier. Or it's like it's an inference that I don't think makes a lot of sense in the context of what the situation is that he finds himself in.
Can you believe she's had no work done?
that's the most horrifying thing about this. Shaw's a good example, too. So I know that you had said you'd like Shaw. I think Shaw's probably a clearer example. Sure. Although I don't want to miss the point that also Patrick Stewart, Jesus Christ, it feels like he's in the middle of congestive heart failure the entire day.
Yeah, he's just so old. I really don't want to keep saying that, but it's
he can't breathe during his lunch. he's short of breath for no reason. It's awful. Yeah. It sounds like his heart is failing.
There's one scene where I think you can actually see a blood pressure cuff on his arm.
The nurse in the background. Just ducking out of the shot.
No, I mean, I hate to say it, but it's, I don't know. It's just,
it's like sad in the sense of like he should probably be retired or at least like working on great material at that point.
You know what the craziest thing about this fucking show is he's 80 something years old, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like he was that old when season one started, and they're like, what if we have Picard like run around and like get blown up by stuff and move more in a single episode than he has ever moved in seven seasons of the original show?
Yeah, no, it's true. They've not adapted to his thing. But before I lose my train of thought, and then you can do what you want. Shaw is a good example of both the scene-to-scene stuff and characters not making sense within their own like reality or context. Mm-hmm. Shaw has multiple sequences in this episode where he has his characterization, which is that he's a stick-in-the-mud kind of person who is not going to bend the rules for people, and like he doesn't have the respect for Riker and Picard that is going to cause him to make a decision that is just to save their lives, only to have a scene end. And then the next scene is he's apparently 180'd into another perspective where he's like, I'm going to put the Titan between the tractor beam and free them and get them the fuck out of there. And then he has the other one where at the very end, when Picard's like, he's my son, and Shaw's like, oh, fuck yeah, we're taking him down, and he sits down in his chair. What is Shaw's characterization? Because Shaw, to me, only makes sense as the person who's going like, I don't give a fuck who these people are. I'm not going to risk 500 people on this ship to save them. Sorry, Seven.
I think what they're doing is having him just change his mind, frankly, because the saving of
just
the
like
ship,
that with no discussion. That's my problem.
Yeah, well, see, that's the thing, right? They're doing it for dramatic, for drama's sake. So instead of when Seven goes in there and has the talk with him, instead of him giving a rebuttal where you see Seven like actively dissuade him from his opinion,
yeah,
they do a hard cut to him cock blocking the tractor beam with the ship, which it, admittedly was kind of cool, but you know what I mean, where it's like, yeah, okay, he's changed his mind on the page turn, as you'd say,
right? It's just such bad, right? But they do it multiple times, and what it does, it makes him feel inconsistent in that I no longer trust him. Like, I don't understand what he is as a character because he's so inconsistent all the time.
I mean, I don't know. I'm on the fence about it because on the one hand, like, he doesn't change his, like, it's not like once they get onto the ship, he's like, hey guys, I was wrong. It's good to see you all. He's like, he's kind of incrementally moving where he's like, yeah, I can't let you fucking die, but I also can throw you in the brig or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, he's incrementally moving around. He's not just completely changing course.
Well, but
like,
but he is saving two people at the expense of 500, which was his point that he shouldn't be doing
right.
that. Like, so, because my problem with that whole Seven scene is that she goes, like, it's the meta commentary realization of what this show is from the writers, where Seven literally says, you're going to let two Star Trek legends die out there? And he goes, oh, I have to save them, I guess. But in his reality, I see the better Shaw choice to not go and rescue them, because there's no reason to do that at that point. Like, he is risking the 500 to save the two for not particularly even any good reason. It's not like the nuclear war machine is happening right now and he realizes he has to do something to stop it.
Mm-hmm.
He's just saving two people from a ship.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's kind of a tough call because, like, let's say he didn't save them and they get blown up. When he comes back to Space Dock, what do you think that conversation is going to look like when they're like, I'm sorry, you let Admiral Jean-Luc Picard and Captain Riker
die
because they... no, excuse me. Riker doesn't have a ship. Fuck him. Never mind. But you know what I mean? Like, what's that conversation? I think that's what she's appealing to.
That's only in Star Trek fan conversation, right? Like, would the people actually care in this universe about that? Like, Shaw has the example, he's outside of the Federation.
It would turn into Star Trek Benghazi.
That's a more interesting show.
it actually is. But you know what? It would be the same kind of thing. I mean, maybe not, because the last time Picard showed up at Starfleet, they told him to go fuck himself.
Yes.
Pretty literally. Yeah. But I don't know. I'm not disagreeing with you. I think they are very much... Seven's point of view is very much the point of view of like a Star Trek fan.
Yeah.
I don't think that his decision is... I think the way that they execute it, yes, is not that interesting, but I don't think that the decision in and of itself is unbelievable.
I would agree. And so I think that's a good point of like, that's the difference between this season and prior seasons, I think, which is that in this example, I can see a reason why Shaw would want to go back. And so when he does it, it kind of makes sense. And I don't throw up my hands, as I was saying earlier. The problem is that they still haven't really figured out that they need to give him a good reason to go back. And they can't just throw him back there like that.
I think the more interesting way to go would to have him be like, do you think I'm actually going to leave them there? I'm not going to fucking leave them there. Like, give him like... make him smart enough that he comes up with a way to save them. You know what I mean? That is maybe just not the first thing that Seven thought of. You know what?
So I'd have like something valuable on the ship. Like, he learns something that is not to save those two characters, but has to go back because of what's on that medical ship or something, you know?
Yeah, that would work. But I'm thinking like, you know, something like Kirk would do, where, you know, he's always, when Khan leaves him off on Genesis or wherever the fuck he is.
Yeah.
He plays it off like it's this horrible thing, but it's he's actually like 2 hours ahead because of whatever. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that sort of thing where it's like Shaw looks like he's leaving them behind, but he's actually thinking two moves ahead as a way to get them out of there safely, that kind of thing.
100%. I would agree that there is a way to do this.
Where he can do it and still be mad about it.
Yes.
But right. He can still do it at, like, of his own accord.
Right. Correct.
The one I have more of a problem with is after Amanda Plummer says, we have more weapons. We have weapons beyond your comprehension. And if I even see your nacelles light up, I'm going to blow you out of the fucking sky. And then at the end, he's like, well, fire, I guess. And then he shoots like three photon torpedoes and just like slowly peels away. And it's like the whole thing. He's not going to do anything because they're going to blow. She believes her statement that right. She can blow him up in 30 in like a half a millisecond.
Yep.
And then what does he ultimately do? She's like, let's just make her go for it. What the hell?
Just runs away. Yeah. Yeah.
And, like that's another one where I feel like if he's going to do something like that, he's got to be a little bit smarter about it and have some sort of like show us who this guy is as a captain
right.
by how he gets out of the situation. And I don't think you really get that in either of those instances.
It's a good point. I would agree. I think that my frustration with Shaw is that I think Shaw could have been a really interesting foil for Picard. And my issue with him is that it's the sort of like, it's the poor quality of the writing which causes things like in the previous episode, I don't even think that we mentioned this, but he has like that casual racism towards Borg survivors.
Oh yeah, we did. I think we did mention that.
We did mention that. Okay, so there's this kind of semi obvious attempt to play him in multiple ways, and it's just coming across as he's not a consistent character with a very consistent point of view that will drive the actions that the characters take because he's so predictable and like you know what the brick wall is that you're going to run into with him.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it feels like they want him to be an antagonist, but they don't want you to not like him. So he'll occasionally flip-flop back and forth to do these things. And what it ends up doing to me is that it actually weakens him as a character and it weakens him as a captain because I no longer feel that he is the person who's in command of the Titan, really,
yeah,
in a way that like Picard just kind of takes it over and takes it away from him. So I'd be disappointed about that. The way that it ties into the Picard the character thing is that I don't know how you feel about it, but I've been watching these two episodes now, and I was just thinking back to the first two seasons. It's kind of remarkable to me how we've talked about this previously, but it like really hits home in these episodes how. Like on the periphery, Picard is in his own show. He spends a lot of the show just kind of walking or standing next to Riker on the side of the room.
Right, right.
And they don't have any really interesting conversations. The stuff that they, when they talk about it, they kind of have cringeworthy conversations where Riker's like, did you fucking stick it in, Bev? When did you do that? 20 years ago? Sounds about right. They have these really weird conversations like that. And Picard kind of grimaces a lot. He's always grimacing in this show when someone asks him something. Mm-hmm. And I feel so much is lost by just not having Picard sit down and have extended conversations with the characters that we know, or any character, yeah. Really.
Well, with that in mind, I did like the scene where he interrogates Jack.
That's pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah, that was the closest to one of those scenes I think you get in this episode. But yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah, it's tough because like I don't know. Given the story that we have so far, I don't know what Picard's role in it is.
Yeah, at this the villain point. Doesn't even care about him. It doesn't.
Yeah,
seem.
And so I think that's what makes it difficult to put him front and center because you know with the Shaw thing, kind of moving back to the Shaw thing a little bit. I'm a little bit surprised that they're not trying to like backdoor pilot this a bit and give you a character in Shaw and a ship in the Titan where you come away going like, man, This guy's fucking cool. Like, right. I'd like to spend time with him.
Yeah.
Yeah. If they came out in 6 months after this is over and said Star Trek Titan is coming out next year, and people are like, oh, awesome. Fantastic. Right. That's great.
Yeah.
That's where I feel like you should put more work into this guy, but they're not really doing that. And so, at least not yet. And so, you do kind of have this weird ether where no one is really the focus of the story, least of all the guy whose name is above the credits.
That's the surprising thing. Like, if this was a longer series, I would be fine with backgrounding Picard a little bit. But
yeah,
it's only been a 3-season thing, and this is the final season of it.
Yeah, the tough thing too is like, you got a show called Star Trek Picard, right? There's like one story you can tell.
Yeah.
And that is like, because the whole conceit of this series is he's been retired for X many years. He's come out of retirement to do something that's like one last mission that's really personal. And they did that in season one. They just bricked it.
Yeah.
And so now they tried to do it in season two, and that didn't work. Like literally the only other thing that you could grasp onto is, well, Q. We still have Q. We can do something with Q because he is inextricably linked to Picard. Yeah. Great. Awesome.
Bookend
it. Bricked that one harder than they bricked the first one. And so, like, literally the only thing left is get the crew back together.
Correct.
And even but once you do that, you gotta do something with them. And so it's a weird place to be in because there is no direct link to Picard himself in this story up to this point.
Yes.
Other than Beverly and the fact that it's his son, which, like, okay, yeah, that's a big deal, but like, I don't know, it's not as big a deal as Q dying or Data coming to him in fever dreams or whatever.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I feel like they've run out of things that are just like hard hooks into Picard. So I'm curious to see how it's going to move forward with him as the central character. Or is he just sort of a background player? Which, I mean, after 2 seasons of watching him running around,
I know.
I don't mind shifting my attention to Riker and the rest of the gang.
That's the thing. So one point that Darren Mooney made in his review is that, and we've seen it so far, is that they are going to slow drip the TNG cast into the show. Like,
I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Well, the problem with it, I think, in my perspective, would be you are not giving anybody any time to actually have the conversations that I would want them to have on this show. Like, they're just, and Worf is obviously going to take a little bit of time to catch up to Picard somewhere down the line. So I'm not interested in seeing Worf run around with Raffi, quite frankly. Like, that's just a complete waste of time.
Yeah.
So the thing is that, like, if you're going to do this thing where the cast comes together and Picard is there, this is probably, in my opinion, for like, if you're just going for this kind of like, this is the last hurrah, last rodeo thing, this is probably the worst way to do it in some ways, which is to have this story that seems to revolve around the shipped romance between Crusher and Picard resulting in an offspring. Mm-hmm. And then having everyone else have to talk about that for a while.
Right. Like, yeah.
That's just not exciting whatsoever. And I guess this is a good place to talk about Jack Crusher. What do you think about Jack Crusher? I don't like this idea whatsoever. My thing is that, like, and a consistent problem, and this is very subjective and this is just my opinion, I really hate it when people who are not parents are told that they have a child who's 20 years old and they somehow have an emotional connection to them immediately. It makes no sense to me. It's just not believable.
I don't know about that. I think that that's relatively believable. I mean, it's a big deal. I mean,
no, you would have no idea what that means. Like, the only reason it means something is because you've experienced having a kid and watching them grow up and realizing that you missed something of that with this person. If you don't have that, I think you would just approach them as like almost a stranger that you would have no idea what, like, the relationship doesn't mean anything to you at that point.
So I don't know if I agree with that, because I feel like I feel like you would probably instinctually and reflexively become protective of that person as a way to make up for the fact that you were not part of their life. Whether or not that's the right thing to do is, I don't think matters. Mm-hmm. I do think that that would be, for a lot of people, that would be the reflex there is, you know what I mean? I
think narratively that makes sense. I have a hard time buying it as a justification. Like I know that they did it with Kirk previously, and mm-hmm. it's just one of those things that's like, and Picard is a tough character to do it, because Picard is not, it's never been that much of a focal point. Like, they've brought it up before, but
you can go ahead. Part of the reason part of the reason it works for Kirk is because Kirk's such a hound dog.
Yeah.
You know, like, Kirk has never been someone who's like a family guy.
Right, and him getting older and settling down is kind of an arc for him in that way.
And so when you do it with Picard, it's like, Picard wasn't exactly, you know, the premier coxman
over here. His sperm are moving better than he is at this point, it seems. They got their motility.
You know, but to be fair, though, and I only know this, I'm, you're going to be shocked that I can pull this out of the ether, but I only know it because they mentioned it in the Red Letter Media thing, is like, there's, in Generations, he has that whole breakdown when he finds out that his brother and his nephew have been killed because there's no more Picards.
Right.
And so I could see him, I could believe him attaching himself to Jack in that way, simply because that is now not the case.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it works as a story beat.
Sure.
I really don't believe that, especially men. I just don't think that males would have, like, there is no connection to the kid at that point. And an older kid, it's not even like it's a small child that you have to protect. It's like a grown-ass adult is now showing up and you're like, well, I don't know anything about you. And he doesn't have the prior child experience of raising a kid to realize like what the cruelty is that he did that caused the separation, really.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is that, like, in setting up the Bev Crusher thing, he just hasn't talked to her for 20 years. It's like this weird, like, high school thing. He's like, I don't know what went wrong there. She just doesn't want to talk to me anymore. And it's like, well, you seem to have fucked her and then, like, abandoned her or something. And, like,
so you're telling me the end of Forrest Gump doesn't make you cry because you don't believe Forrest Gump would have the capacity to love Haley Joel Osment when he finds out that he has a son.
But he's also young at that point, which I think that's makes true. A difference. Like, if this guy is like 20 years old, 25 years old or something, I think that there's, I could understand a smaller child because they haven't been abandoned for that long, but there's just nothing Crusher. And also, she named him after her dead husband, which is a weird choice too.
That's true.
It's very uncomfortable to me. I think that, like, I was never one of these people who was like, I want to read some fan fiction about how Bev Crusher and Jean-Luc Picard really wanted it all the time from each other. I thought the best episode with their relationship was just the one that was just like, yeah, this isn't going to work or whatever. You know, it's like we share. We're basically good friends, really, is the sense that I got them from the show. And this just makes me uncomfortable, this whole sequence with Jack Crusher.
I mean, you know, like I said, it's like the only thing they got left to mine for a Picard emotional beat. Well, I mean, they kind of, don't they sort of play this card a bit in All Good Things? Like, isn't it sort of, aren't they on sort of the same terms where it's like, yeah, there's some relationship there, but it didn't work?
Yeah.
Like,
deep? Or it just felt like, to me, it was just like, it was one of those things that never, the flame never ignited on it. So it just didn't turn into anything.
For some reason, I feel like she goes by Picard.
Oh, did they divorce? Oh.
Is there a beat where they say Captain Picard and it turns out to be Beverly Crusher, or am I just making that up?
You go ahead. I'll look it up and say.
Well, either way, I feel like I think in All Good Things, they're kind of mining the same area here, because obviously, you know, they're jumping 25 something years into the future and picking up threads that were in the air at the end of the show. Like,
it is his ex-wife. You're right. Remembering.
Yeah. So they were married and they broke up, and like, so, and they do the same thing. Like, they're going 25 years from the point of All Good Things. So you have the contentious relationship between Worf and Riker because of
Deanna Troi.
Troi dies. It's like, so far may as well have killed her off in this one too, because I don't know what the hell she's gonna do. But so clearly, like, it's been set there that there is some future with Picard and Beverly after the end of the show.
Yeah, that's fair.
But still,
I never bought into it, I guess. It's just, it doesn't
it does, like, I think the fact that they have them get divorced is like all that you need to show that they're like, yeah, let's put them together. Clearly this isn't going to work.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess. You know? Sure.
I will say, though, I think the best scene in the in this episode, and probably the best single scene in the whole series so far, is when Riker schleps Beverly onto the bridge and they just look at each other and they don't even have to say anything.
Oh, did
and
you like
he,
that?
And he, I thought it was really good. Okay. I thought it was undercut by him turning around going, it's my son. But like, I thought that moment, I was really expecting him to be like, Beverly, is it true? And she's like, yes, John Luke, years ago, you and I loved each other. I thought it was some bullshit. But
the they're going to have a Raffi-esque explanation about their relationship.
But the fact that they just shared a look and that was enough, I thought that was nice.
Huh. Yeah, I don't. So I guess I'm not invested enough in their relationship for this to matter to me. Which is my own fault, I suppose, and I should probably, maybe there is more to the relationship that I'm just not invested in, but it's a, I think what's tough about it is that I kind of liked it always being a little bit of a background thing.
Sure, yeah.
And fronting it is, what it does is it kind of takes away the workplace professionalism that defines the show. You know, where
I think we're well past that.
We are past that. But when you're going to have a scene or a series where Beverly and Crusher talk about that time that they had unprotected sex 20 years ago and this is the result, it's going to be like, this is not Star Trek. I don't know what this is, but this is a strange thing that these characters are going to start talking about this. I just don't know. I don't think that it's for your final season. I know it's the last card that they have to play. I just don't think it's a strong one that you can really exit Picard on.
You know what I might have done?
Yeah.
I might have done a similar story, but focused it on a kid from one of the other crew members. You know, like,
and
Picard has
a relationship with that kid instead?
Yeah. So Picard has some sort of, like, you know,
Deanna and Riker have a kid. They could have used her.
That's true. Yeah, could have used her. Yeah. But something where it's like he is sort of experiencing it in a surrogate father kind of way.
Yeah.
That makes him more reflective over things.
Yeah.
Because I feel like that's more in line with his character, where, like, you know, at the end of the season when Riker finally reunites with his estranged daughter or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, he's there watching and kind of like has a smirk on his face.
Yeah.
He's getting the satisfaction of other people coming together that he can't have himself.
Yeah. And I don't know if that would be like the series so far has just been real pretty miserable in terms of Picard. Like, he's not been a happy character at this point in his life, the end of his life. And I think there's a way to play that, which is to be true to the character that he never has a kid, but it can still be the sort of like happy experience of he lives on through something else, as you're saying. Like, it doesn't need for him to have a blood relationship with this, but it's just the next generation idea is that he's able to influence them and he's able to cause something to happen. They're just running out of ideas, because when you can go like, well, Kirk and everything already did this in the movies, it's like, well, that's what we've got for the final season of Picard. We're gonna redo that idea over and over again.
And then after he dies, you can really ham-fistedly have Riker's kid say that she wants her last name to be Picard now, just like in Star Wars.
That's right. Looks to the stars.
You know, speaking of Riker, I was thinking as I was watching this episode, does it make the show better? I think this might make the show better from just a pure writing standpoint, as far as like building conflict between characters.
Yeah.
But I don't think the fans would love this. What if you just replaced Shaw with Riker? And so Riker is the captain of the Titan, and it's like, I mean, I guess at that point it's basically all good things, and he's like, Riker, I need your ship, and he's like, I don't want to give you my ship, Jean-Luc, and then they get right into an argument or whatever.
But yeah.
I mean, it does take away kind of the one bright spot of the show so far, which is the two of the repartee between the two of them.
Yeah, I thought it was much less. I thought it was much worse in this episode than the first
one.
Yeah,
it wasn't as good as the first one. Yeah. But I was thinking that. I was like, I don't know. Can you get away with that? I think maybe the fact that Riker is now retirement age as well probably doesn't fly as well, because he and Picard are kind of peers and stuff.
Yeah.
So, and it, you know, having a younger guy there probably is the way to go. But
I would have been for it, because it makes Shaw's decisions. If Riker was doing it, you at least go, oh, he's conflicted about what to
right.
do.
Right.
Shaw has no confliction in what he's doing. That's what makes this so
frustrating. We're going to find out episode 10. He's going to be walking to his quarters on the Titan, and Picard's going to be talking to him, and he's like, you know, I never thought that we'd see eye to eye, Shaw. And he's going to be like, you know, I didn't think so either, but because people say never meet your heroes, but you know what? And then he opens the door to his room, and it's just full of Jean-Luc Picard memorabilia. And he's like, I think you're A-OK, Captain Jean-Luc.
They high five, and that's the end. Yeah, maybe that Ferengi had some memorabilia.
Yeah, what'd you think of the Ferengi?
I thought he was fine. He was not annoying. What they basically did is they just made the Ferengi what they always kind of wanted them to be without the annoying habits on top.
Yeah, I thought he was pretty good, because I feel like he was more in line with what we talked about like years ago with what they should be, which is they should be more scary and they should be more intense.
Yeah, just gangsters. More believable as gangsters as opposed to, you know, tradesmen or whatever.
I was a little bit disappointed that they dialed down the ears, though.
They did. They definitely streamlined them.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I guess it's tough to be tough with
huge,
gigantic ears, but I'll take it.
Yeah, I thought that they could have, it could have been much worse than how they reduced him. I thought he was fine, and it's one of those things of like almost not trying too hard makes it work, really. Like they didn't try to Ferengi him up or anything. He's mostly suffers because, I don't know if maybe we should just end with talking about this. The Raffi scenes are just dead weight. And I don't know what they gained by keeping her around.
I don't know. Maybe it's a contractual or something.
Yeah, or they just made a bad decision at the end of the second season. They cut everybody else, but she's still here. It's just that this...
I think they have to have her in here so they can claim it's a third season of the show.
Oh, maybe, yeah. Just they have to have something else. Other
no, it's the
man.
Same show. All your favorite character is still here.
Here she is. Well, she's certainly not my favorite character. Actress is not... Michelle Hurd is not given a lot to work with here, but so far it's just been this... She is the most modern Trek plot line of it, of like trying to find this thing that's happening somewhere and talking to people. And they've layered on this really shitty ex-junkie trying to work underground storyline on top of it. Her conversation with her ex-husband about her son is an abomination.
Also, what's up with that guy? Because he's living
he's an
on
artist,
this,
Clay.
Like,
you must really
he's living on this weird like gangster planet, like out of Blade Runner and shit, and he walks up with like bedazzled overalls that are like splattered with multicolored paint. And he's like, I'm an artist, baby. I have connections to the underworld. And I'm like, what the hell is going on?
He drinks at that bar where the real gangsters hang out. And he knows everything. And you know, they can't even set up. So the Rafi decision is another example of that thing I was talking about before, which is that characters don't make believable decisions because the show is too aware that's a Star Trek show. So when your ex-husband shows up and is like, you know, you saw our son and he said you looked pretty bad, and she's like, oh, that's terrible. And he's like, you have to make your decision. Do you go to your child or do you stick with your failed career? Any real show that's not this Star Trek meta commentary has a harder decision than the one Rafi makes in that moment, right? And it's like, it's almost even cornier that he's like, you have to tell me right now. Like, tell me, make the decision right now and tell me exactly what you're going to do. Why?
Well,
what is empathetic or sympathetic about Rafi in that moment when she makes that decision?
I think what they're going for is they're playing on the thing that they set up all the way back in the first season of her being prone to paranoia and that being the thing that drove her family away.
Yeah.
And in this instance, she is not being paranoid. And her decision that she has to make is one that will... she needs to make the decision the way she does because she knows that she needs to save as many lives as she can, because she knows it's going to be catastrophic. She knows that it's not, it's her being paranoid. There is someone with a world killing weapon out there. She has to stop.
Okay. Would it be appropriate for the characters to talk about this kind of thing? Like, I agree with you that she thinks she has a galaxy threatening weapon on her hand that has to be dealt with and that she can't go back at that point. I would appreciate it if the show would actually sort of concern itself with matters like that. Like, it's mm-hmm. so it's trying to have its cake and eat it too. It's trying to have Rafi has a story that is emotionally gut-wrenching and she makes the ultimate sacrifice for her family, but they play it in such a flippant 10-second scene that it's a joke by the time that it's over.
I guess the tough thing is, though, it's like her husband is coming from the standpoint of, this is just another crazy thing that she talks about. Why would I believe her now versus any other time? So, like, I don't know if them really having a dialogue about it would change the outcome.
No, well, you know? Maybe it doesn't need to change the outcome. Does she even tell him about the weapon in this?
I thought she did. I thought, I don't know, maybe she's just vague with him.
I think she's vague.
Is it one of those... excuse me. Is it one of those exposition scenes where she's really vague and he's like, I don't know what you're talking about. Conspiracies, world killing weapons. It's all the same thing you've always said in the, like, it's one of those things. Yeah, maybe. Which it's like, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what else you really do. I guess they could talk about it more.
Don't even do it then, you know? Don't have the contact be your ex-husband on this planet and you have this conversation about, like, have her be competent as a Section 31 person, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I find it...
Yeah, they got to have something for her to do. I mean, she's...
She has too much screen time as it is.
They're mining the stuff that's built, baked into the character the same way they're doing with Picard. And it's just like, she's not a particularly interesting character, so I think it stands out.
Yeah. Yeah, I would have just... I think she has way too much screen time for something that's not very interesting at all.
I think the biggest thing with her is that what she's doing is so vague that scene to scene, I don't give a shit about what she's doing. Like, even that first scene where she gives all that exposition, I'm like, all right, so I guess we're going to talk to a Romulan, but to get to the Romulan, we got to go through a Ferengi because he knows where the Romulan is, who... is the person who was blamed for using the weapon because Starfleet is covering it up by blaming this guy.
Yeah.
And it's all this really, like, convoluted shit. And I'm not even sure, like, she was supposed to look for the Red Lady. Now, I guess that's not the thing anymore.
I'm lost on all that. I don't know what that
means. And then so she goes to this place and she's talking to her husband and she's like, I got to talk to this Ferengi. He's like, you're drunk. And she's like, you're high. And they, like, I'm not catching... I'm not catching what the thing is that I'm supposed to really be caring about, other than she's like tweaking out because she knows people are going to die.
Yeah.
So it's tough for me to really latch on to what she's doing, because what she's doing is incredibly vague and on top of that being very convoluted.
Did you like seeing Worf again?
I'm on the fence about Worf because
it's his best fight scene by far.
Oh, by far. Yeah, because it's not Michael Dorn doing it. But, you know, I kept thinking about what you said in the last episode about how he had such a nice ending to his character, where he becomes this ambassador character who becomes the bridge between two worlds.
Yeah.
And so if he's just I don't think this show, well, this might be famous last words, but I don't think this show is shallow enough that he's just going to be this warrior guy. I think there's going to be more baked into it than that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. How did you feel about it?
Dorn is going to be, with Frakes, the MVP of the season, I think. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that those two are the characters that have a lot of fun with... They're the actors that have a lot of fun with their characters, and sort of like... they bring a little bit of spirit to things in a way that the rest... Like, Beverly Crusher, Gates McFadden, is not bringing anything to Crusher, you know?
She has had half a line between these two episodes.
I think in this one she says she's credited as a guest cast with no lines or something in the Memory yeah. Alpha. But I don't think, you know, I don't think Sirtis is really going to be involved that much. I wonder about how much the Forge is going to be doing something in it. But mm-hmm. I'm fairly certain, I would bet, that scenes in the future episodes with Dorn are going to have an energy to them that the other scenes don't have. And so... Yeah. I'm happy he's here for that, but it's like what you just said about what we were talking about last episode. Like, his character ending was so perfect that this is only going to make it seem fucking stupid no matter what he does here.
Yeah. I'm worried it's going to feel like the fifth season of The Wire, where it's like they didn't, because in season four, McNulty had such a great, perfect ending to his character arc.
Yep.
And then they're like, here we go again. And they basically threw all that out the window and returned him to the way he was at the beginning of the show. And it was terrible, because it's like, you're when you have a character with a satisfying arc, it's always depressing to see them toss that away.
Right. Yeah.
The thing I'm really curious about moving forward here is like, I one of the things that makes me think maybe Vedic doesn't stick around past episode four is I have no idea at this point how we get from where we are to Lore and fucking Moriarty. Right.
I was thinking that too, actually. I have no idea where they would come up, where they come from. Could be. I don't know. It's one of those, it's like, is Vedic the codenamed person that everyone keeps talking about? Is that somebody else? You know?
Yeah, well, they refer, I believe the cryptic term they use in this episode is the marked woman.
Yeah, the marked woman.
So I don't know if that's her, somebody else.
Yeah, it's not particularly interesting. It's just, it would be nice to know how long. There's a lot of shots of Vedic on what looks to be the Titan. So that must happen at some point. But we'll see. I don't know.
I'm just so, man, I know we've talked about this ad nauseum, but this new Star Trek thing of like obscure characters with vague names, like the marked woman or the red, I'm just so tired of it. It's just
so boring.
It's so boring. It's never satisfying in any way.
No.
And it just feels so lazy. It's just a way to string the story along in a way that's just kind of hacky.
Yeah. Have we noticed in this episode any, before we get out of here, have we noticed that was always a hallmark of the previous seasons, and I think that they're doing it here in the way that you say. But is there any other, do you have any other sense from the writing, those sort of hallmarks of the earlier seasons in terms of hiding the ball a little bit?
Mostly.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. Nope, go ahead.
Well, it's, I feel in some ways they've moderated it and they've made it a little bit better, but it's still there in that I feel like characters aren't having conversations that they should be having with each other, really, which is like the genetic history of Jack Crusher feels like it should be more thoroughly debated than it ever is between any character at any time.
Right. Like, well, even more than that, it was just occurring to me, does anybody at any point in this episode go, hey, does anybody know who this Vedic person is?
Right.
Hey, Jack, who's this person that's trying to kill you?
That's true. And maybe the
Can we call old man Spock to see if he knows who this person is?
Maybe that's true. Is the show just getting better at hiding that shit from us, but it's still there?
Yeah, I think it's probably a little of both.
Yeah.
Because I think the worst version of that is the Raffi stuff, because she's the one who's getting all the obscured vagaries and stuff. Where at least in the Picard main storyline, they're not hiding the actual thing from you.
Well, to be fair, Raffi has no one to talk to. I guess, you know,
right?
Like that would be my point. Is that like if Raffi was sitting with the person who had all the answers but was not asking that person what was going on, that would be it. I would agree with you. Hers is an example of that. It's just slightly less frustrating and more pathetic because she just kind of talks to herself about it.
Yeah. Well, I think what they're doing in the main storyline, the Picard storyline, is they're doing the same kind of thing, but they're just not, they're not drawing attention to it within the show. They're letting it kind of sit with you.
Mm-hmm.
So like, yeah, they're giving you this Vedic character, but they're not telling you anything about her yet. So you're sitting there going like, all right, what's her deal? I wonder what her deal is.
Right.
And they're doing the same thing with Jack Crusher, where it's like, they're giving you Jack Crusher and they're telling you that he's Picard's son. And you're like, oh shit. Okay. What does that mean? So you're doing that instead of them having weird code names or something, or
that's something
that everybody has to discover at the same time on the show. Like they're letting the viewer do some of that speculating instead of forcing everybody on the show to literally do that.
Yeah.
But Raffi then stands out because she's the one who ends up literally speculating about what these weird code names and the Conclave of Eight is about or whatever.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That makes sense.
I don't know if I'd say it's good that they're doing that. Like, I find it to be less insulting that they're doing that.
Yeah, it's a good way to describe it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, it is just, you know, to bookend this discussion, it does, this season just feels like a slightly more refined version of what came before it. It's not as egregiously stupid in a lot of cases. It still sneaks in a little bit of that stupidity every once in a while, but it's not enough to sort of totally derail the narrative that's going on. My main issue is that I've been more enjoying these two episodes than I have the previous seasons by far. Not to say that it's a good show. My main disappointment with it is that it's already, I think there's only 10 episodes, so we're already 20% of the way through it. And it's another case of like, it might have the old show's DNA of like, it's going to spin its wheels for a little bit too long. Mm-hmm. And the biggest problem I had with this episode is that I didn't feel like they accomplished all that much over the course of an hour.
Yeah. I think that's what I meant when I was saying it felt like a bridge episode. It felt like a bit of a wheel spinning episode. But that's why I'm wondering if it is in fact really broken into arcs, how that changes the way the season flows.
Yes. Doesn't change the fact that nothing happens in this episode. And I don't think you're saying that, but like it still makes it a boring episode.
Yeah. But it makes me wonder like, okay, when we hit episode 6, are we going to avoid that interminable wheel spinning that we've done in the past two seasons?
Right.
Because they actually have something new to do, you know?
Correct.
And I will say too, you know, I know this stuff goes either way with people when it comes to the references and whatnot. But I think one of the things about this show is that the references that they're doing are just you can argue whether or not they're too pandering, but I just feel like they're more satisfying than usual.
Oh, okay.
Like when at the end of the episode, when they reveal Worf and they kick in the Jerry Goldsmith Klingon theme from the motion picture, I was like, fucking A, man. That music is awesome. Like, I love that stuff. And so like I think that's part of why this is going over better for a lot of people, is because the references that they're making are like a little bit more thoughtful,
yeah,
I think, in the way that they're presented, even though there are so many of them.
Yeah. Slug O'Cola or whatever that stuff is that the Ferengi are drinking as a callback.
Like I was watching the Red Letter Media review, and they were talking about of the first episode.
Yeah.
And they were talking about the ship, the Titan, and they were showing the Titan. I was just like, man, that's a good looking ship.
Yeah.
Like it's hitting the Star Trek buttons, because it's, yeah, they're cheating because it's a Constitution class, so yeah, it looks like the old style, but it's like, that's a really satisfying looking ship.
Yeah, it's a little box. The nacelles are a little boxy. It does. The space scenes do look like Star Trek in this season, at least. So that's good.
All right. They're in space too. They're actually doing stuff.
Yeah, they're in space, not L.A. in 2022. All right, I guess so. We're done with this one. This is Disengage, and the next episode is going to be 17 Seconds. Is that what it's called? Hold on 1 second there. 17 Seconds, which I don't think is a pun on
part two.
TNG quotes or whatever. So we'll see. It's directed by Frakes.
That's how long it took to conceive Jack Crusher.
That's oh, Beverly.
That's disgusting.
I don't think it's cruel or whatever, but like, people in Hollywood need to learn when enough work on your face is enough. It's like, you guys are old. Just be comfortable being old. You know,
fine. Yeah, I know. It's tough. You know, you're in a business where the way you look is your entire currency, and some people just feel the need to keep pushing. But
you can teach dance. You can do that. It's a
competitive stretching.
Yeah, there's a lot that can be done. I don't know. Sure. It's a business. You need to develop enough emotional strength within yourself to not think that's something that's necessary.
You realize that you need
to be a comfortable person.
You realize that actors are like the least emotionally stable.
I know they're delicate,
planet,
little, delicate little flowers. They have a very hard job standing where people tell them to stand and saying the things that other people read for them.
Yeah,
it's that Seinfeld bit. It's very hard.
Like Ian McKellen on Extras. I'm not really a wizard.
I just say the things. Yeah. Well, we'll see where Bev picks up the pace here. And then we'll return to Jack Crusher, 17 seconds, and we'll see where it is. Clay, do you have any other final thoughts about this one, or are we done? It was a long conversation.
Yeah. No, I think we're done. I think we boldly went as far as one could go on this one.
Does Vedic have any connection to them, to anybody?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. I have no idea. Like, I have no idea where her connection could be. Like, it might, maybe it's something like she's connected to Lore. I don't know.
Are the aliens on her bridge aliens that we know wearing disguises, or are they a new alien species?
God willing, it's an entire ship full of Datas.
And it's just the synths have just found their own place.
Yeah. No, I don't know. Like, that's one of the things is I think they are. That's what's so weird about her character is they're setting her up as this person who's like, I know everything about you, but there's nothing really. Nothing she's a there. Brand new character, so there's no way to really know what that connection might be.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. We'll find out.
We will. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thank you for supporting the show on Patreon, which is where you're listening to this. So we'll be back next week with 17 Seconds.